Welcome to a very special edition of Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Caroline Seymour. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. Today, we pass the mic to Charu Agarwal, MD, MPH, a medical oncologist at Abramson Cancer Center, and the Leslie M. Heisler Associate Professor for Lung Cancer Excellence at the University of Pennsylvania's Perelman School of Medicine, who moderated a discussion on the Phase 3 ADAURA trial and the use of adjuvant osimertinib in patients with EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer. Dr. Agarwal was joined by Alicia V. Sequist, MD, MPH, the Landry Family Professor of Medicine at Harvard Medical School, Director of the Center for Innovation in Early Cancer Detection at Massachusetts General Hospital, and a medical oncologist at Massachusetts General Hospital Cancer Center, and Nathan Pennell, MD, PhD, Professor of Medicine and member of the Developmental Therapeutics Program at Case Comprehensive Cancer Center, a medical oncologist at the Taussig Cancer Center, and Director of the Lung Cancer Program at Cleveland Clinic. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Agarwal, Dr. Sequist, and Dr. Pennell provided perspective on the results of the ADAURA trial and addressed the potential clinical and financial concerns of using osimertinib in the adjuvant setting in patients with EGFR mutant non-small cell lung cancer.
Hi, everyone. I'm Charu Agarwal, the Leslie Heisler Associate Professor for Lung Cancer Excellence at the Abramson Cancer Center at the University of Pennsylvania. Really delighted to be here with two of my colleagues in the lung cancer space.
My name is Nate Pennell. I'm a thoracic medical oncologist and professor of medicine at the Cleveland Clinic, Taussig Cancer Institute, and thrilled to be able to talk about this very interesting trial.
And I'm Alicia Sequist, a thoracic medical oncologist and professor of medicine at Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston. It's awesome to be here with you guys.
So we are here today to discuss the results from ADAURA, which of course has made quite a few waves in the lung cancer community since its release at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology. So just to bring everyone up to speed, this was a phase 3 randomized clinical trial that included 682 patients with completely resected stage 1B, 2, or 3A non-squamous non-small cell lung cancer that harbored either the exon 19 deletion or L858R mutation in the EGFR domain. After receipt of standard of care therapy, patients were randomized to either receive up to 3 years of osimertinib or placebo, and we saw data that reported significant improvement in disease-free survival for patients that received adjuvant osimertinib. It's important to note that we saw two-year disease-free survival data, and a hazard ratio of 0.17 was seen in favor of patients that received osimertinib, necessitating an early reporting of these data at the annual meeting. Alicia and Nate, you know, I was very impressed when I saw these hazard ratio results, and especially spectacular in the patients that had stage 2 and 3A disease. What are your thoughts?
I agree. I think it was incredibly impressive. I'm trying to put myself in the shoes of the Independent Data Monitoring Committee when they saw this interim analysis. I think it's important to stress that this wasn't the planned analysis of the trial. In fact, there was only 22 months of follow-up on the trial, and the treatment duration is 3 years. So almost everyone's actually still in the treatment phase of the trial when it was unblinded. And in the primary endpoint, which was in patients with stage 2 and stage 3A disease, I mean, a hazard ratio of 0.17 is, I don't think that I remember another trial with that level of a difference. That translated to an absolute difference in two-year disease-free survival of 46% difference, a 90% disease-free at 2 years in the osimertinib arm and 44% in the placebo arm, which, you know, in one way, not unexpected, because we'd seen in previous trials of EGFR TKIs that about 90% of people would be disease-free at 2 years on TKIs. But for the first time in a really randomized study, we saw how devastating the recurrences are in patients who don't receive TKIs with this disease. And so as we were left with this very impressive curve and have now to decide what to do with this data. Alicia, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you guys. I was blown away in a positive manner with this data. And it was great to see because, as Nate alluded to, this trial doesn't stand in isolation. You know, there's a 10 plus year history of looking at this type of strategy of genotype directed therapy in the adjuvant setting. And the main critique of the prior studies was that the design wasn't quite right, that, you know, we just still couldn't move this into practice because the design wasn't right. And this is the first study that's read out that I think has an excellent design that we can really feel comfortable talking to patients about this. You know, I think it was back in 2011 when Memorial Sloan Kettering first published some retrospective data where some of their patients had been treated with adjuvant TKI and some hadn't. And of course, you know, that was interesting and a kind of parameter setting for what the treatment might show, but it wasn't randomized. It was based on physician choice. You know, we had the randomized Radiant studies and the adjuvant study from China, the Sitong study, that were both randomized, but maybe not designed quite right. And then we had Nate's SELECT trial, which was very informative, but a single arm trial. So this is really, I think this is the data we've all been waiting for this strategy.
I think there's been a lot of concern that the trial is quite immature, right? I think, you know, only 29% maturity for even the DFS data. And some of these results may not translate into an overall survival benefit. I've been very mindful of the fact that we don't have an overall survival advantage yet, but at least in the preliminary analysis that was presented, hazard ratio of 0.4 in favor of the osimertinib arm does look favorable. Of course, we'll have to wait and see how these results translate into an actual overall survival benefit. But I would say that, you know, for patients that have this particular mutation, this is a therapy based on these results that really argues for a discussion in clinic about the benefit that we see with DFS and the lack of OS data at this point in time. What are your thoughts about, you know, the clinical concern regarding lack of overall survival?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely valid to be concerned about this. I think ultimately what we care most about is, are we actually curing more patients with the drug? And short of potentially curing people, are we significantly prolonging their survival? And then, you know, third would be, are there other concerns such as, or is it meaningful just to delay recurrence in people? And because it certainly is a devastating diagnosis to have recurrent incurable lung cancer. But the reality is it's way too early for us to know whether there's a difference in overall survival. And because patients, even with stage 4 EGFR mutation positive lung cancer, live potentially for a median of you know, in excess of 3 years on the FLAURA trial, it's going to be potentially years from now before we'll really know the difference. It's possible that we might see a result earlier than that. It depends on whether the patients who recurred had access to effective EGFR targeting therapy at recurrence. We also know that, you know, lung cancer is a devastating disease, and many of these patients who recur may not even survive to go on to treatment. So I think it's certainly a reasonable argument to make to wonder if survival might be the same if they recurred and were treated at recurrence. But at the same time, I don't think we can make that assumption. And if there isn't a survival benefit, despite a hazard ratio of 0.17, then there really probably is no, that would put a nail in the coffin of adjuvant EGFR therapy, because this is about as big a difference as you can see. So I think it would be hard to imagine there's not eventually going to be a difference. And I certainly think the data is good enough to sit down and have a conversation with patients to discuss whether this is worth using at this point.
I mean, one thing I've heard people say is that the fact that this study was unblinded and presented publicly at this early time point is going to somehow compromise or taint our ability to ultimately see overall survival. And I'm still trying to wrap my head around how that would be. You know, I'm not directly involved with the study, but my understanding is that the patients actually have not been unblinded, that the data has been unblinded. But if I'm a participant in the study, I actually don't know if I'm on placebo or osimertinib The other thing is, again, my understanding, I'm not directly involved in the study, but I believe that the patients on this study will all be offered osimertinib or will all have access to osimertinib at the time of progression. And so, you know, if you were trying to look at a study design that was unblinded early, or not even the unblinding, but if you wanted to suggest how could such an impressive disease-free survival fail to translate to overall survival, I think you would have to either imagine that there was a gross difference in availability to effective treatment at recurrence that might impact survival in that way, or that the placebo randomized patients somehow had a different outcome. In other words, maybe the osimertinib treated patients on ADAURA had a horrible response to treatment if they recurred. And to me, both of those don't really hold water. I think as long as there is access to effective EGFR treatments upon recurrence, it's likely to be given to the same percentage of patients in both arms. And then the idea that the osimertinib adjuvant patients would somehow do much more poorly if they did recur does not hold with what we've seen in other data, you know, specifically the patients in the SELECT trial who recurred after adjuvant erlotinib were treated with erlotinib for first-line metastatic disease. And again, this wasn't a randomized trial, but those patients did very well. So I'm having trouble figuring out how we have somehow tainted or ruined our ability to see a survival advantage. What do you think, Charu?
Yeah, I do think that there are lots of factors related to this. Like I said, looking at the significant improvement in DFS, it'll be very hard for me to not offer this to a patient or not have the discussion. Of course, we don't have the FDA approval just yet. We all anticipate that this is coming. One of the things that becomes increasingly important, again, is this issue of testing. And, you know, we don't really do a fantastic job in the stage four setting as is. And I believe that pathways will have to be, you know, put into place at various academic institutions, as well as the mindset will have to change amongst all practicing oncologists to ensure that these patients are identified appropriately. And I would like to highlight that, you know, this is not a population that was completely and never smoking or former smokers. About 25 to 30% or 32% of the patients on this trial had been smokers or were current smokers. So, you know, I don't think we should let our phenotypes guide testing. And I anticipate that to be a big challenge based on extrapolation from our stage four setting, where we don't really do a fantastic job already. I will also point out that, you know, there has been a lot of concern about whether or not adjuvant chemotherapy should be given to these patients at all. I have certainly talked to my colleagues that, you know, adjuvant chemotherapy for stage 2 and 3A patients is a modality that has actually shown survival benefit over and over again in large randomized trials. So we should not be abandoning that practice in favor of osimertinib use after patients have resection. And I worry that, you know, somehow, you know, on the one hand, we have people concerned about lack of overall survival data. I do worry that there will be, on the other hand, there will be people who will jump upon using an oral targeted therapy and give up adjuvant chemotherapy. I really feel like there's a disconnect and wonder what your thoughts are about that. You know, do you feel concerned that people will stop receiving adjuvant chemotherapy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's, I want to say inevitable, but hopefully it's not inevitable, but it's hard to imagine people not seeing this data. And if they were presented with the discussion that they have this highly effective therapy, that many people might say, well, can I just skip the chemo? You know, do I really need that? Can I go on to this? And the truth is, this trial doesn't answer that question. We do know that the difference in disease-free survival was about the same, whether people got adjuvant chemo or not. But you're absolutely right. Platinum doublet chemotherapy has a proven survival benefit. And I don't think we can cavalierly reject that unless we had a trial that was head-to-head. I actually think, you know, combining it might be an intriguing question to ask. I know that there's a phase 3 trial of osimertinib in the stage 4 setting with or without chemotherapy that will be very interesting. I also think, you know, earlier treatment might be potentially more effective. So this is a valid area where we might consider new trials, although adjuvant trials take so many years, it's hard to imagine that will have time to happen in the patent life of the drug. But for now, I would say I would certainly, for my own patients, recommend that they continue with adjuvant chemotherapy and then get osimertinib. I do think the testing question is very important. Obviously, we can't use this drug unless we identify the EGFR mutations. And as of right now, I think very many places do not test early stage patients for mutations. But at the same time, this is almost an ideal scenario to do that, because the people who are going to be getting, or who are eligible for this, if we're looking predominantly at stage 2 and stage 3 disease, are going to be getting adjuvant chemotherapy. So there's no rush. And they have an entire resected tumor, so there's going to be plenty of tissue to do the testing. So as long as there's an awareness that it's necessary, I think it would be certainly very doable to incorporate routine EGFR testing into these patients.
One other question about a standard therapy that should or should not be included for patients like this is radiation, because the trial design was solely in patients who didn't receive radiation, and there were a number of stage 3A patients in the study, and one could argue that they should have received radiation as per standard of care. If we are typically using radiation either pre or post-operative in our stage 3 patients, the question now is, should we continue that practice, even though ADORA doesn't really include patients like that for the same reasons that Charu argued about chemotherapy? I would say yes, we should include radiation as per standard indications. And this adjuvant osimertinib is just something that we add on top of that. It's funny, Nate, you said something about the patent life. Another argument that I've heard a lot since ASCO is about how much this is going to cost. And it's funny because I actually don't think that targeted therapy for a very specific population of patients is all that costly when you think about immune therapy for all of our stage 4 patients that we're giving. But at the same time, we don't have overall survival yet for these, and we do for some of those situations. What do you guys think about the cost of both quality of life costs and financial costs of giving a patient 3 years of adjuvant osimertinib?
Yeah, I don't think we can overlook the cost argument here. I do think I agree with you, Leisha, that we use certainly many more expensive therapies in situations where we may not have an overall survival benefit, right? I mean, this is including all of oncology, and I think we are all guilty of using extremely expensive therapies without proven benefit. I do think that at one level we can't really have an argument about one therapy and really ignore all of the other therapies that we use. But having said that, are we going to realistically stop osimertinib at 3 years? If somebody's doing really well, and then, we get into this possibility that oncologists will be prescribing osimertinib for a very, very long time with the added toxicity, minimal albeit, but still toxicity, as well as the financial toxicity that comes with it. I think it also depends on, what is the out-of-pocket for these patients. Is this completely covered? Is this a significant financial burden to these patients or not? I think these are important conversations to have, and something that, at least at our level, when I'm sitting with the patient, something that I can discuss on a personal level, find out from them what their, out-of-pocket payment would be and how we as providers can help in a particular situation. But then there is this larger discussion that we need to have in general as oncologists in terms of cost of care overall.
It's absolutely right. There's the larger discussion about costs of drugs, which is beyond the purview of this podcast, and it's nothing that we can solve personally here. But it's very important to have that discussion on an individual basis with the patient to discuss what their out-of-pocket cost will be, because this drug is very expensive. And even if you only have to do a portion of the overall cost as a copay, that can still in some patients mount to several thousand dollars a month. And I don't know, not everyone is eligible for financial assistance or really is able to get enough to make it very affordable. So you're really going to have that discussion on an individual basis with each patient. And Leisha, you mentioned the quality of life cost as well. I'm a little less worried about that. I think that osimertinib is a very well-tolerated drug. It does cause some dry skin, and your nails get weak and crack, and some people have intermittent diarrhea. There certainly are occasional people who have much more significant side effects, but you know, with close monitoring and dose reduction, I think most patients will be able to live with this fairly well. The question of whether it's going to continue beyond 3 years is, I think it's fine to look that far ahead and worry about, you know, consequences of people's decisions down the road. The reason that is a very relevant topic is that in our study, Lisha, the SELECT study, we noted that after the 2 years of treatment were done and people stopped 2 years of adjuvant treatment, there was an excess of recurrences afterwards, suggesting that at least a subset of people may have had persistent disease that just was suppressed by the drug. And it's way too early in ADARA to know if that's going to happen here. But if we were to find at years 4 and 5 that the people who'd completed 3 years and stopped started to have an increased number of recurrences, you know, it's hard to imagine that might not influence whether people would be willing to stop at 3 years or not. So what do you think about that?
It gets to something you mentioned earlier, which is, are there other important endpoints besides overall survival? And, you know, oncology has really grown up as a field in this era where overall survival was the be-all, end-all endpoint. But when we have newer therapies and subsets of patients who are living for a decade with their advanced lung cancer, you know, survival is not the only endpoint. This gets tricky where, you know, we now are lucky enough to be in an era where patient advocates are so much more involved in helping us interpret research and helping us educate each other and patients. And, you know, I find it presumptuous maybe for us to say, here's a treatment that maybe delays your recurrence for 6 years, but people still end up living 15 years at the end of the day. And for us to say whether or not that's important, you know, I mean, it's kind of uncharted territory. I think that it will be very interesting to see what the long-term outcomes of this study are. But what I worry about is waiting years for those long-term outcomes before we start talking about it with our patients today. It sounds like all three of us are on the same page with that.
Yeah, and I do think that, you know, within, as both of you mentioned, I think within this group of patients that receive osimertinib, there is a distinct subgroup that may benefit more than the other subgroups or may benefit from longer duration or longer suppression. And I think all of us agree that we need to better identify these patients, right? I mean, who are those patients who may derive the maximum benefit? Should we be using, you know, techniques like MRD detection for all of our patients after surgical resection to really even further pinpoint our management for these group of patients that receive targeted therapy?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And that my thought about this trial is it's with as limited a follow-up as we've got. This is as close to use the home run analogy that Dr. Herbst did during his presentation, but this is about as positive as it could be given the limit of the data that we have, and certainly good enough to have a discussion and start routinely using it. And so I would actually suggest that we move beyond having debates about whether this is meaningful or not, because I think within the limit of data that we have, it is, and start asking the next levels of questions. Should we be doing it earlier? Should we be combining it with chemotherapy? Should we be doing it in the neoadjuvant setting? And Charo, as you mentioned, should we be looking for things like minimum residual disease with ctDNA to try to detect patients who might benefit more so that we're not necessarily treating people who don't necessarily need years of expensive and drugs and identify those who might benefit the most? And I would say we need to get on doing those studies rather than waiting years to rehash whether this particular trial is worth applying.
Well, I think we could all talk about this for another hour because there's so many details and interesting subplots to this trial. But for the sake of our listeners, we should probably wrap up. It's been great to talk to you guys about this. It's a really important trial. Likewise. I'm glad it's generated so much discussion amongst our colleagues.
Likewise, yeah. It's so nice to discuss this with you.
Yes, this was a great conversation. And thanks so much, guys. I had a really good time talking about this. And I look forward to talking with you about other interesting topics in lung cancer.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to Onc Live On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field and recaps from our State of the Science summits and institutional perspectives on cancer webinars. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you like today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.